Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Imagine if you could get yourself in your peak mental state anytime you wanted. Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about the science of mental preparation. But first, congratulations. You believe in lifelong learning. You believe that to achieve more, you must become more. You believe that leadership in all its forms is the key to making an impact. Whether you listen during your morning commute or maybe on your morning run, you know that LeadX helps you to stand out and to get ahead. LeadX is the smartest way to start your day. Today's 1 minute career tip is celebrate. Order that cake, pop that champagne, or bring in a bunch of pizzas to share with your team. What are you celebrating? Everything. Birthdays, work anniversaries, milestones, reaching your company's goals, failing to reach your goals if there were some lessons learned along the way. In this crazy busy world we live in, we are always driving, and reacting. Great leaders know to pause, have a little fun, and while saying a good job, celebrate with the entire team. It boosts engagement and builds the team for the long term. Celebrate. Now, our guest today is a senior editor at Harvard Business Review, and his writing has appeared in many magazines, including Newsweek, Inc., Fast Company, and Wired. His new book is Psyched Up: How the Science of Mental Preparation Can Help You Succeed. Our guest is Daniel McGinn. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So let me start with this, Dan. I was saying right before we went on the air, so this is really a message for the listeners. You know, I read several books a week for this show, especially leadership books, business books. And what you bring in this book really goes far beyond what I was expecting. You're a great writer, but it really puts into perspective this idea that, look, we're all working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, but our real successes come sometimes in just a few minutes. It could be a sales pitch. It could be a negotiating session, whatever that is. So it's very important that we be at our peak stake in these special moments. How can we put ourselves into this peak state? So I just want to send this message out to LeadX Nation that really, you know, pay attention on this interview. And as always, of course, I encourage you to go out and get psyched up. And Dan, we're going to turn specifically to that topic very soon. But first, I have to start with the first question, which is for all of our guests. Tell us about a time when you failed, maybe early in your career, because we want to learn the lesson that you learned along that way.
Sure. So I've been a writer and reporter and editor for 25 years now. And the nice thing about that, well, that you fail frequently, but you fail in sort of small ways. So I was a reporter at Newsweek for many years. I would write dozens of stories a year, and some of them would work and some of them wouldn't. So I didn't have any sort of spectacular flame out failures. They would be more sort of quieter failures. And I think the thing that I tried to do the most from them is figure out which ones were clearly I did something I shouldn't do again, which ones were really learning opportunities, and which ones were really anomalous, where I did everything right more or less and something else got in the way. So I think trying to differentiate from those, kind of think about it as like a type 2 mistake, type 1 mistake. What can you learn from? What should you just discard and not let it affect your confidence going forward? Because if you dwell on failure too much, it will paralyze you. And you need to find that line between what you can learn from and what you need to forget in order to keep going forward.
Yeah, that's great. Instead of bringing you down, it's sort of win or learn instead of win or fail.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Daniel, again, this book is going to be, I think, one of my top favorite, one of my top 10 books of the year, Psyched Up. And you share the rituals that so many athletes, soldiers, entertainers use to get ready when they need to perform at their highest level, their peak level. And you say that, you know, even if we're not a special forces soldier, even if we're not an entertainer getting ready to go on the big stage, just in our regular work lives, we can benefit from this sort of pre-performance ritual idea. So is there some research to back this up?
There is. So because I work at Harvard Business Review, we're a very research-based magazine. So I would never try to write a book like this without spending a fair bit of time in academic journals and talking to people at universities around the country. For every chapter in the book, each chapter in the book looks at a specific technique you can use to get psyched up in these moments before you go on the stage. Techniques to reduce your anxiety, to boost your confidence, to use rituals, to use music. And for every one of them, there's at least some research. The rituals in particular, there's research, especially in sports, across all sorts of different sports that show that people that do the same thing every time in terms of their thoughts and their actions before they perform, from sports ranging from darts to water polo to rugby to diving, they tend to do better. And they've even done interventional studies where they'll take a group of performers, they'll teach half of them how to do a ritual before they compete, they'll have a control group that does nothing different, and generally speaking, the people that learn to do the same set of things before they perform leads to better outcomes.
Love it. And the LeadX show is all about, you know, taking some of these great ideas and making them really applicable, really applied. So I'm going to use myself as a guinea pig. I don't have a ritual right now, and I'd like one. And I'll give you two real world examples of where I could use them. Just earlier today, I interviewed Captain Sully Sullenberger, from the guy who landed the plane on the Hudson River outside of New York City. And it was a pretty big interview, and I had a lot of butterflies and some anxiety that I don't normally feel before interviews. And a second thing is, I have to write, I've got a book deadline on September 1st. I've got to write about 55,000 words between now and then. I don't have a whole lot of them written just yet. And so when I go and try to get into my writer state of mind, I'm actually just feeling the pressure, the stress of that deadline, which is clearly not the peak state I want to be in. So give me advice. How might I go about coming up with a ritual that I could use either before a big speech, a big interview, or when I want to get into the writer mode?
Sure. Let me give you two examples, one for each of those specific use cases. So on your interview with Sully, one of the best things you can do to boost your confidence is to do what I tend to think of as the greatest hit strategy. You want to try to relive in the most visceral and sensation-rich way you can your best moment in that similar activity. So what I would do before you interviewed Sully is I would think over the interviews you've done to date, and you've done a whole lot of them, obviously. Right. What's your best one? What was your, especially a high pressure, famous person kind of interview? Go back and listen to it. And as you listen to it, think to yourself, wow, I really crushed that. You know, when I bring my A game, I'm really good at this. Do that just before you get onto the phone or the recording with Sully. It puts you in the right mindset to say, you know, I can really perform well at this, and it naturally will boost your confidence. It's a very easy thing you can do. And so before I write, I do that. I go back and I'll look at, you know, some of my favorite articles. Just takes a couple of minutes, primes me. It helps me focus on a time when I was successful in the past, and I can do it in the future. In terms of your own writing, here's a completely different technique you can use. So there's a lot of research that shows that lucky objects can increase your confidence. So people in college will often have like a lucky pen they take to exams, or a lucky outfit, or they'll sit in the same seat in the classroom every time they take a test. You can incorporate some of that into your writing routine. There's in the lucky object domain, there's actually research that shows if you use an object that was used by a famous performer in the past, you can perform better. So when I was writing my book, I actually sent a keyboard off to Malcolm Gladwell. I had him write on it for 3 months and ship it back to me. And I don't use it every day, but I have Malcolm Gladwell's keyboard. And when I get in a pinch and I'm kind of nervous and I have a high stakes assignment, I use his keyboard. And so here's my offer to you. If it gets to be August and you're under the gun and you're feeling a little crunched, you just shoot me a text, give me your address, and I will give you as a loan, I will give you the Gladwell keyboard to help you focus and help you produce when you need to under pressure.
What an offer, the Gladwell keyboard. I think I'm going to be taking you up on that offer, and you're going to regret it, because now there's going to be struggling writers everywhere that are going to be asking you on Twitter to send the keyboard, the magic keyboard.
I'm going to have to insure it. I'm definitely going to insure it when I mail it. That's for sure.
So that's great advice. I'm serious. I'm taking notes on this to psych myself up. What about when we want to get other people psyched up? Our, you know, if we're a coach, it's our team members. You know, if it's our, it's our troops, our soldiers, our Marines. If we're in the military, you know, it's just our everyday colleagues at work. What do we say or do to get other people into this peak state?
So that's one of the things that first got me interested in this whole topic. So I was not a very good athlete in high school, but I played football and basketball. And I first became interested in this notion of psyching up because I was fascinated by the things the coaches would say and do to us to try to get us amped up before the games. In the book, there's a whole chapter on pep talks, and I, you know, talked to famous practitioners of pep talks, but I also looked at the research. The research generally shows that a successful pep talk has three elements to it. Number one is direction giving, the strategy. You know, if you're talking about a sports environment, that's, you know, exactly what the strategy to win that game offensively, defensively is. Military, it could be a military strategy. Sales context, it could be exactly what you want your sales force to focus on towards the end of that quarter to drive towards their quota. The second element is what they call empathy. You need to acknowledge and make a personal connection with the people, that what you're asking them to do is hard, that you're thankful for them, that you know you've been there, you know that this is going to be a long day, and you know that victory is not assured. You need to sort of connect with them through empathy. And the third thing is you need to engage in what they call meaning making, which is often the toughest part. You need to connect the specific task you're asking them to do with some larger, really important thing. You know, one game is in the arc of a season. One small military mission is in the arc of a larger campaign. It connects back with the home, with the people at home. So try to put the task in this larger perspective.
Wow, that's great. Direction, empathy, and meaning making. I'm going to definitely remember that. And what's great is you, whether you've got 1 minute before the big event, or you've got, you know, the a longer period at the beginning of a meeting, you can use this same structure no matter what kind of format you're in.
That's true. There's actually in the July-August issue of Harvard Business Review, we've excerpted from that chapter of the book. So there's an article, and if you Google on the phrase "the science of pep talks," that article will pop right up. And for that chapter, I spent the last day of the month at Yelp, which has a big sales organization, and I watched how their sales leader, you know, fired up her troops to go out and sell Yelp ads to make their quota at the end of the month.
Great, great stuff. Now, this is a little bit of sort of inside baseball, certainly a selfish question, because I you know, read and discovered that while you were doing research for your book, you also interviewed Bill Campbell. Now, for those of you who don't know, Bill Campbell was just this legendary executive coach in Silicon Valley, very secretive. And, you know, he didn't give many interviews. And Dan, you probably, you know, interviewed him last before he passed away in 2016. You know, did you get anything from your time with him? Like, what made him so special? Because there's a lot of executive coaches out there. But I mean, Bill Campbell is, like, again, a legend, like, stood on his own. Why do you think that was the case?
Well, I think that it's not a coincidence that Campbell's renown is partly because of where he was operating, specifically in Silicon Valley. And when I interviewed him, one of the things we talked about is that, you know, obviously, so he was a very good high school football player. He went on to become a football coach. He had, you know, almost a decade of college football coaching experience before he sort of stumbled into Apple Computer in a way that probably wouldn't happen today. And one of the reasons his coaching expertise was so necessary in Silicon Valley is so many of the people that run those companies didn't grow up in a sports environment. You know, think about Bill Gates, think about Steve Jobs. They spent their teenage years with their faces planted into computer screens. They were coders. They, you know, most of them, you know, I think Mark Zuckerberg played some tennis and may have been a swimmer, but he's the exception. Most of these guys, you know, none of them played, you know, the sort of competitive team sports that are really the proving grounds that teach a lot of this pep talk idea, this idea that you need to motivate people, that you need to create teams. So I came to view Campbell in some ways as providing tech industry leaders in particular as something that a lot of us pick up a little bit intuitively during the traditional adolescence, because some of these guys were really prodigies and didn't have a typical adolescence.
That explains a lot, and you triggered a memory. When I was literally in my teens and early 20s, I was sort of interning at the old AT&T Bell Labs in Murray Hill, New Jersey. And I worked with obviously some literal geniuses, technical geniuses, and they were horrible managers, horrible bosses. And I, at the time, I didn't understand. I just felt badly about myself. I thought I was not fulfilling, you know, my role there. And finally, someone grabbed me and said, "Hey, listen, Kevin, you know, they grew up with their nose down in books and studying. They weren't in a lot of social things. They've never been trained in managers. So it's not you. And it's not that they're bad people. It's that they just don't know how to do this." And that makes a lot of sense. This know that, like I said, what we learn as we, whether we're playing little league or high school or college sports, there's not a lot of that in that community.
Yeah. Even if you work in an industry where technical skills are paramount, the necessity of having Campbell-like characters around Silicon Valley show that somewhere along the line, leaders need to pick up the people skills, and it doesn't necessarily come naturally to everybody, especially if you're working in a context where your success as an individual contributor has come mostly on the technical side.
That's great. Dan, we've come to the end of our time, but before we wrap up, I always like to challenge our listeners to become just a little bit better every single day. So give us a challenge. What's something that you can ask us to do today to, you know, help us to fulfill our potential?
Well, so I think you need to distinguish between, in any performance you're preparing for, what's the actual preparation, the rehearsal, the substance of what you're going to give, but then also the sort of performance hack you're going to do right before it. So if you're going to give a classical piano concert, there's nothing in my book that would suggest that you shouldn't practice the piano a whole lot. Clearly, if you get on the stage and you don't know how to play the piano, you're not going to be successful. What I am suggesting is being really good at the piano isn't enough if you don't have something you're doing in the last 10 minutes to make sure you're not too anxious, to make sure you're high in confidence, to make sure that you have the right energy level. That on top of all the practice, you need to layer this ability to psych yourself up to bring your A game when it matters most. And that's, you know, it's an essential ingredient to high performance.
That's great. Dan, thank you for coming on the LeadX show. Will you tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and your work?
Sure. The book is called Psyched Up. The website for the book is called www.psychedupthebook.com. It's available in bookstores everywhere, and most of my work is featured at Harvard Business Review. Our website is www.hbr.org.
Brilliant. Friends, you've just been mentored by Harvard Business Review senior editor Daniel McGinn. Don't forget, you can get the links he just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And while you're there, you can download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. Until next time, remember, leadership is not a choice, because leadership isn't about authority, it's about influence. And you influence people when you speak up and when you take action. But also, you influence those around you when you are silent, when you choose to be a bystander. We are all leaders. How will you lead today?